How about changing America's student loan system? I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The White House wants Congress to reform the federal student loan system as public and private college tuitions keep rising with the burden of student debt rising alongside. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more on some proposals that include new limits on borrowing and changes to loan forgiveness and repayments.
Americans' total student loan debt has reached $1.5 trillion, and Greg McBride at Bankrate.com says most of that is from federally backed loans.
The government is on the hook for about $1.2 trillion, which is a nice way of saying all of us taxpayers are on the hook.
More than 15% of borrowers are now in default, and the White House wants to rein in lending, in part by capping federal loans to grad students and parents. Rob Franek is editor of the Princeton Review.
Will that then channel students into high-interest private loans? And then I have some real concerns.
The White House also wants schools to have more financial skin in the game by sharing the cost of student loan defaults, says Mark Kantrowitz at SavingForCollege.com.
Where's the college going to get that money? Well, they'll get it from increasing tuition.
A Senate committee is working on similar proposals to cap borrowing and streamline income-based repayment plans. Legislation could reach the full Senate by summer. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
We won't get a public statement from the Federal Reserve until tomorrow, but the 12 people who watch over interest rates in the economy are set to start their two-day meeting in just about a few minutes in Washington. Here's how Lindsay Piegza, the chief economist at Stifel Nicolaus, plans to view any new information we get.
I think the Fed is widely expected to remain patient and keep policy unchanged. The interesting part will be the tone surrounding that decision. As of December, the Fed was anticipating two additional rate hikes in 2019. So we'll also be looking for whether or not they revised down that forecast within the dot plot. We could see that reduced down to one or no further policy adjustments in terms of the committee's expectation. If we did see the latter, I think it would be a very clear signal to the market that we should start to think about moving from neutral policy to defensive policy.
You mentioned the dot plot. It's a graphical communication device, give you a sense of what all 12 members of the Fed, where they're leaning. You find that useful?
Well, I think it was useful in the beginning. I think now it adds more confusion to the marketplace because it does seem to highlight the outliers.
But if you step back from your view, it leaves me a little bit concerned about the state of the U.S. economy. Is that where you are?
Well, I think that's pretty much what the chairman has told us. He did say that he expects the U.S. economy to remain in positive territory, but at a noticeably slower pace than what we saw last year. We could see GDP fall well below 2%.
Lindsay Piegza is the chief economist at Stifel Nicolaus. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Want a beer or sausage? Then just swipe. Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta has gone cashless, one of the first stadiums to do so. In football season, it's home to the Falcons. And now as soccer season begins, the Atlanta United, Susanna Capilouto of WABE in Atlanta, reports the move also comes with, apparently, a cut in concession prices.
During the home opener of the Atlanta United soccer team, the Fries Up concession stand was very busy.
I would like three hot dogs, two fries,
The price for a hot dog here dropped this season from an even $2 to $1.50.
Go ahead and swipe when you're ready.
Because swiping is now pretty much the only way to get food at the stadium. Before going cashless, the stadium had set all prices to end in a full dollar because messing with coins slowed things down. Now prices can be more flexible, says Mercedes-Benz Stadium COO Greg Beatles.
So, for example, our $2 hot dog, we don't have a lot of options to lower the price on it if it's only full dollar increments, so we lowered it by 50 cents.
Beatles says going cashless will shorten lines, and the stadium saves on personnel, since concession stands no longer need to safeguard their money.
Whenever they take cash, we have to have security guards that carry it back to the cash room from all the locations all around.
But there's a twist on those savings. That $2 hot dog included the sales tax. Now the tax is added on, which didn't go unnoticed by soccer fan Denise Crawford.
It's kind of deceiving because in actuality now I'm paying 8.9% sales tax on the, quote, lowered price.
So the $1.50 dog is really $1.63. But Crawford likes the cashless policy. For people who only have cash, the stadium set up 10 kiosks that turn cash into Visa gift cards free of charge. Bruce Seaman is a sports economist with Georgia State University. He says a lot of venues around the country will be watching Atlanta's cashless policy.
Sporting events, arts events, crowd events where speed is of the essence, those areas are ripe for this kind of experimentation.
Atlanta Stadium officials say on the first cashless day, less than 1% of fans used the cash-to-card kiosks. Though they wouldn't give a dollar amount, they say concession sales were about the same as last season. In Atlanta, I'm Susanna Capoluto for Marketplace.
We have a companion business of sports story today on a growth spurt for U.S. professional soccer. It's in the Marketplace Morning Report podcast feed now. The early social media platform MySpace is apologizing after erasing from its memory banks a treasure trove of user creativity over the years. MySpace used to be a favorite of bands posting their work online, but now an estimated 50 million songs and other work from the company's start in 2003 through 2015 is feared deleted forever. How many artists kept copies of their performances elsewhere is an open question. MySpace, which still exists, although in a much reduced form, blames a server migration error. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.